As many of you know, I had a professional life before I went into the ministry. And in that career, which was in university development, I filled a number of different roles. And one of the things I got to do was travel. And I often went to different cities and places to meet with alumni, to talk with them about the opportunity to support the institution I was representing. I also had the opportunity to go to professional development meetings. And I know that can sound kind of boring. You've done it in your fields probably, and you've sat in some conference room where there's been no window, and somebody's droned on and shown you PowerPoint slides, and you've wondered when you would escape. Well, I have to say that many of the meetings I went to were actually very stimulating, and that was because of my colleagues and because of the programs we put together and the locations. Some 20 years ago, I had the opportunity to go to a meeting in Nashville, which, as you may know, is the home to Opryland, and that's where our meeting took place. So it wasn't some nondescript corporate big box hotel. It was at this great convention center. And yes, there were hotel rooms, but there were shops, there was dining, there was entertainment. It was really kind of neat to be there. But I have to confess that after a couple of days of going to meetings and sessions and poking around Nashville, my colleagues and I, or at least three of them, were all talking, and we had an epiphany. We were just 3 hours from Memphis, and we would never, ever, in all likelihood, ever be that close to Memphis again. Now, none of us really had any deep affection for Elvis. But the opportunity to go visit Graceland was like a siren call, and we could not resist it. So one morning, we piled into our rental car, and we headed out of Nashville and made our way to the ground zero of Elvis worship in America. We showed up at Graceland. And I will confess that we were a bit disappointed that there weren't people milling about dressed in white jumpsuits. But other than that, the experience was everything we could have hoped for. If you've not been to Graceland before, there are docents who treat you respectfully, who know all about the house and can tell you stories about Elvis. It's like going to the White House or to any other historic site. They take it very seriously, which was kind of interesting when we were shown the famous jungle room. Some of you may have heard about it, maybe not, but we got to see that. We got to see Elvis's dining room. We got to see pictures of him throughout his career. We got to see his big jet plane. We got to see his grave. And then we got to see the gift shop, which was really well done. Well, we had a great time there, and we were tired, so we piled back into our car and headed out on the road from Memphis and returned to Nashville. Now, I will confess that at that time, I did not think, nor did my friends think, that since we were in Memphis, we might go to the Lorraine Motel. It wasn't on our radar screen. We just didn't think about it. So we missed that opportunity. Now, I will say that I'm pleased that last year when I took my sabbatical and we began it by going down to Atlanta, my family and I went to the Ebenezer Baptist Church. And we also went to the King site. And it was really amazing. As you can see, I was moved. But one of the things I noticed was that the king we remember when we think about Atlanta is not the king who was present in Memphis. And that's not to say his interests weren't the same. It's not to say his ministry wasn't the same. It's not to say his passion wasn't the same. But a lot happened between the march in Washington in 1963 and King's death in 1968. And we like to remember 1963. We like to play the videos and listen to the audio of the I Have a Dream speech. It makes us feel good about ourselves. It makes us feel good about our country. There are all those people gathered together in Washington, fighting for civil rights, fighting for everybody to have a place at the table. And we can feel optimism. We can feel that maybe we're getting it right. But by the time King went to Memphis, there was a darker cast to the air, and there was a sense of frustration. There were people in the black community who thought that King was too much of an accommodationist, that they wished he would take up the banner of black nationalism and maybe even violence. And then on the other side, there were white people who thought that King was too confrontational, who wished he would be quiet, and that he was actually behind the violence that had erupted in American cities in the years before. When King was assassinated in 1968, he was a controversial figure. He wasn't the saint that we all imagine him to be now. He was a man who elicited deep passions. Jonathan Walton, the chaplain at Harvard, has said that it's a lot easier for people to look up to a martyred man than it is to deal with a living protester. And he's right. We get to make King out to be the man we want him to be. And we can lift him up to speak to the things that affirm our position, that affirm our beliefs. But I've been reading this book that just came out, The Heavens Might Crack, which is about the death and legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. And it's a reminder of how raw the passions were at that time, and the feelings and the emotions. It was a reminder of what was at stake in Memphis. Kathy before made reference to the new version of the Poor People's Campaign that's being started up now. Back in 1968, Dr. King saw that there were people, white, black, brown, it did not matter, who were being cut out of the American dream. And so he went to Memphis to stand with the sanitation workers. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't spend too much time thinking about the guys, and they're mostly guys, who drive the garbage truck and take away my trash. They just come every other Tuesday, and the stuff disappears. I know when I was a kid I liked garbage trucks. It's the big thing, and it makes noise, and it's kind of cool. But that was it. But these were people, like you and me. And these were people who were getting the short end of the stick. And King thought that was wrong. So he went to stand with them. And we know what happened. He was killed at a motel, Lorraine Motel, on April 4th, 1968. So here we are now, 50 years later. And this is one of the rare opportunities when we talk about King outside of Martin Luther King Day in January. I'm not up here to pitch you on a particular political platform. I don't think that's appropriate. I'm not some wild-eyed liberal telling you that we need to go fight for civil rights. I'm here as a minister of the gospel. And I remember what Paul wrote in the epistle, that there's neither Greek nor Jew, neither slave nor free, neither male nor female. There were no exceptions. There were no asterisks to say, except for those people. It's that simple. Go love your neighbor, all of them, even the ones who don't look like you, even the ones who don't talk like you. Now, I could start citing statistics, and I could start talking about the news, and I'm sure you could find stories that support what I have to say, or you could find stories that will contradict it. So instead, I'm going to point you to an event we heard about before in the service. And that was the leafleting that took place in the parking lot at Kohl's in West Lebanon, right here in our community. Okay? These were racists, let's name it, racists, putting white supremacist literature on cars, not knowing who would get it, but not worried that they would be found out. So what is the church going to do in this situation? Are we just going to say, tis, tis, that's too bad, and then go on our way? Or might some of us go to the vigil on Tuesday night? Will some of us speak up and speak out about this? When people are quiet, hate carries the day. We may not like certain expressions. We might not like the way people present certain issues sometimes. Tough luck. We've got to deal with it. So what I'm going to tell you on this first Sunday after Easter, when we are here celebrating the resurrection, is that we are in a time of hope and possibility. And we may not recognize it. You heard the story about the doubting disciple. But think about all the others who believed. And think about Thomas, he too believed. Believed in the message of the resurrection, that there is new life, that the kingdom of heaven is real. You and I are invited to be part of that kingdom. And to use a phrase that we heard before, it's not a gated community. Everybody is welcome there. Everybody should be part of the welcome wagon to invite new people in. So I imagine I'm back in that car, driving out of Memphis, and I wonder where we're going. And it might be comfortable, provide us with a false sense of security, to head back towards an imagined past. That world doesn't exist anymore. Indeed, it never did. And the future may be complicated. And the demographics of our country are changing, but it's reality. And rather than be scared by the future, I say let's embrace it. Let us go together to the kingdom of heaven.